ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 5, text numbers 39 and 40. Going back, text 29, I'll read the verse. Mahatattva, or the great causal truth, transforms into false ego, which manifests in three phases: cause, effect, and doer. When we discussed that verse, within Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he explains that karya, karana, and kartri, these three, same as the verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, karya, karana, kartri, they, hetu, prakriti, uchite, that verse, chapter 13, karya, karana, here is kartratma, cause is karya, that which is caused, or the effect, karana, and kartri, causes to be done, the doer, or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has identified these as Adhyatma, Adhibhuta, and Adhidaiva. Adhyatma is the cause, Adhibhuta is the effect, and Adhidaiva is the doer, cause, effect. So, material nature has these components, cause and effect. Material nature is also producing the demigods with the mode of goodness in contact with false ego. Is producing the demigods. Now the demigods have not, Brahma hasn't done the Lord Brahma program yet. There aren't manifested yet, but they're not demigods. But at this stage of creation. But going forward to the verses that we've been discussing while here, as the elements manifest, also the controlling deities manifest. That's what we read yesterday. The controlling deities of all the above-mentioned physical elements are empowered expansions of the Lord, or Vishnu. They are embodied by eternal time and under the external energy, and they are his parts and parcels. Because they were entrusted with different functions of universal duties and were unable to perform them, they offered fascinating prayers to the Lord as follows. So there's an event in the sequence of things that's not been elaborated. The event is Lord Brahma appears. Lord Brahma begins creating with the elements in the secondary creation. And then there's demigods. But the agency is from the principal creation, Sarga. And from Sarga, Brahma does Visarga. and then we have demigods. Now we have demigods offering prayers to the Supreme Lord for the capacity to perform the functions that they are to perform, but they're unable to perform them without the Lord empowering them to do so. They're meant to be empowered. This is how they receive their empowerment. And in the verses that we're going to be reading for this morning, there's reference to Adi Atma, Adi Daiva, Adi Bhauta. Those primordial conditions exist. That is, primordial in the sense of before the subcreation of Lord Brahma. The components, the elements, you know, the dynamic exists. They've not taken shape yet, but they exist. Just like the mention of the verses that we covered a few days ago, the manifestation of the five elements, one of them including jyoti, which Prabhupada said is electricity. There's still darkness, because when Brahma appeared on the lotus flower of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, it was darkness in all directions. The element existed, you know, in the warehouse, so to speak. It was accessible for Lord Brahma, but it hadn't been combined yet. The point I want to make here is anything that anyone can do, any one of us, up to Lord Brahma can do, is simply taking something that the Lord has already provided and with His sanction making it manifest. Like that just short comment I made last night about fuel cells. Without the energy of the Supreme Lord, researchers aren't going to be able to produce anything. And it's, you know, as a service unto God, is acknowledging, minimally acknowledging, this is an energy that comes from God. Okay, so as jyoti is not yet manifest, the empowerment of the demigods is not yet manifest, but they're enlightened to the degree that they understand they can't do their service without the Supreme Lord, nor can the miseries that accompany creation be mitigated without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Now this is like really at the beginning of time. So fast forward in time till now, and the picture doesn't change. In the verses, text 39, the demigods offering their fascinating prayers to the Lord pray, O Lord, your lotus feet are like an umbrella for the surrendered souls, protecting them from all miseries of material existence. All the sages under that shelter throw off all material miseries. Adi Atma, Adi Daiva, and Adi Bhautik Maklesha. The contamination of suffering that's due to receiving a material body, everyone has to undergo the birth, death, disease, and old age. Janma Mritu Jara Vyadi. There's not an exception, even if you're a sage or a demigod. But so how do they throw off all material miseries? They're no longer taking shelter of those things as their identity or their means of happiness, but they're taking shelter instead of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So what the demigods are saying is that by shelter of by taking shelter of your lotus feet, which are like an umbrella, all miseries of material existence, they were protected from them. Not like they stopped to exist, or the elements that are created by God stop to exist, or they're interacting and doing things, they stop interacting, everything freezes. But they're protected. Not that, but they're protected. The second thing they say is, all sages under that shelter, that under the shelter of your lotus feet, throw off all material miseries. Two things. One is the process of devotional service. Provides the potency to give liberation. And liberation minimally, in the negation sense, is cessation of miseries. Cessation of material miseries. Neutralizing material miseries. Here's how Prabhupada describes this. The second part is there's the cessation of material misery, there's the attainment of the positive happiness. The demigods, their function is a service to the Supreme Lord. And they know that it's a service to the Supreme Lord. They're empowered to do that service to the Supreme Lord, and they recognize, most of the time at least, that whatever they do is due to the empowerment of the Supreme Lord, and it's just a service unto Him. They're not pure devotees, they have some mixed devotion, but there's great honor that's going to them, and deserving honor that's going to them. Prabhupada is saying it to me. Previous purport, since all the demigods are confidential devotee servitors of the Lord, they are never to be condemned. So, here's what Prabhupada writes in the purport. He's going to be speaking about, on the one hand, the desire to attain liberation, which sages have, and the necessity of knowledge in order to achieve liberation. But the insufficiency of that kind of liberation which the sages attain if they don't take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's lotus feet. Okay, so, purport. There are many sages and saints who engage in trying to conquer rebirth. That's one of the problems. Janma, and then etc. Mrityu, jara, vyadi. So, to take care of mrityu, jara, vyadi, you take care of janma. One misery, you take care of the other three. So, they're interested in conquering material miseries, starting with rebirth and all other material miseries. But, of all of them, that's the sages and the saints, those who take shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord can completely throw off all such miseries without difficulty. Others who are engaged in transcendental activities in different ways cannot do so. For them it is very difficult. They may artificially think of becoming liberated without acceptance of the lotus shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, but that is not possible. One is sure to fall again to material existence from such false liberation, even though one may have undergone severe penances and austerities. This is the opinion of the demigods who are not only well-versed in Vedic knowledge, but are seers of the past, present, and future. The opinions of the demigods are valuable because the demigods, here it is again, the demigods are authorized to hold positions in the affairs of the universal management. They are appointed by the Lord as his confidential servants. So, Prabhupada is honoring, or Acharyas similarly honor, the words of the demigods, particularly in relation to the Supreme. So, the message from text 39 is protection from all miseries of material existence. Second part is throwing off all miseries. The word that's used in the verse is uru, which is translated both as great, but also at the root. The takatrayon unmulanam. From the invocation verse of the Bhagavatam. Tapa traya unmulanam, the threefold miseries are uprooted. From, so it's not like diminished, or the prarabdha karma is neutralized, but at the root the whole program is eliminated. That's finishing miseries of material existence, not just, you know, a tablet or a prayaschitta process that neutralizes prarabdha karma, but the other ones are waiting to fructify and the tendency to do more is still there. That's their appreciation. Pada Aravindam Prapana, those who have taken shelter of your lotus feet and surrendered their tapa, they are experience relief from the distress and samsara dukham bahi, the miseries of material existence, samsara dukham, they're forcibly thrown away. So that's that discernment or discrimination is necessary. That's what the next verse is going to say. Knowledge is necessary to know what's what, to know the path to follow and the path not to follow, or to know what's a desirable creeper in your garden and what's a weed, and pulling out weeds is necessary when you're gardening, when you're cultivating spiritual life. So they continue. O Father, O Lord, O Personality of Godhead, the living entities in the material world can never have any kind of happiness because they are overwhelmed by the three kinds of miseries. Like last night, you know, what is happiness? So this is my verse defining what is happiness. It's defining it, again, in terms of negation. The positive happiness of the soul in service of the Supreme Lord is also there, and that's what real happiness is. But you can't have real happiness if you're still looking for happiness in the material realm. And that's terminated by the process of devotional service, by the process of taking shelter. So they're saying that living entities in the material world can never have any happiness because they are overwhelmed by the three kinds of miseries. Adiatma, Adidaiva, Adivauta. Therefore, they take shelter of the shade of your lotus feet, which are full of knowledge. And we also, thus, take shelter of them. So the glorification is going to a devotional service. They're seeing the previous verse, they're seeing the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet to be like an umbrella that protects from miseries, and sages throw miseries far away. But then the other is the living entities that can't experience that happiness because they don't take shelter of you, and instead they're overwhelmed by the threefold miseries. Some take shelter of you, and those that take shelter of you, they receive the necessary knowledge to overcome miseries and experience real happiness. So the implicit meaning is knowledge alone isn't going to do it. Here's the purport. The way of devotional service is neither sentimental nor mundane. It is the path of reality by which the living entity can attain transcendental happiness of being freed from the three kinds of material miseries. Adhyatmika, Adhidaivika, Adhibhautika, it's spelled out. His happiness, whether he be a man, a beast, a demigod, or bird, they suffer these miseries. His happiness is nothing but hard struggle to get free from the miseries of conditional life. But there is only one way he can be rescued, and that is by accepting the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Now he goes to the side, well, if you have knowledge, then you can become freed from miseries. Because, go the other direction, the root of all suffering is ignorance. So the antidote for ignorance is knowledge, and when you have knowledge, you can become freed from suffering. So, knowledge. Yay, knowledge. The argument that unless one has proper knowledge, one cannot be freed from material miseries is undoubtedly true. But because the lotus feet of the Lord are full of transcendental knowledge, acceptance of his lotus feet completes that necessity. That is to say, the process of bhakti is not devoid of knowledge. And for scriptural reference, in the purport, Prabhupada refers to Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayadahaitakam. There is no want of knowledge in devotional service of Vasudeva, the Personality of Godhead. He is the Lord. He, the Lord, personally takes charge of dissipating the darkness of ignorance from the heart of the devotee. Gyanadipena Vasata. Knowledge is necessary. But that, now the other side is not sufficient. Knowledge is necessary, but it's not sufficient. He writes, empiric speculation cannot give one relief from the threefold miseries of material existence. Simply to endeavor for knowledge without devoting oneself to the Lord is a waste of valuable time. So we don't have an issue with knowledge, we have an issue with speculative knowledge without shelter in the Personality of Godhead. But conversely, shelter in the Personality of Godhead is abundant knowledge. It's not separate from, detached from, independent from the Personality of Godhead's shelter. It's meaningless, useless, totally ineffective. Aruya Krishna Param Padam Tata. Without shelter in the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, that neutrality condition is say it's incomplete, or even one can say it's imaginary. That's been described in the previous verses, imaginary in the sense that it doesn't endure, because the real position where there is the position of neutrality exists is where there's a shelter from which one doesn't come back. And if there isn't a shelter from which one doesn't come back, then it's insubstantial. To endeavor for knowledge without devoting oneself to the Lord is a waste of valuable time. So the demigods are right in the midst of this narration of the process of creation. Vyasadeva is making sure, or Maitreya is making sure, that Vidura understands this the transcendental feature of what is the use of all this knowledge if it doesn't bring one to the lotus feet of the Lord. That knowledge that brings one to the lotus feet of the Lord is very valuable. So the disposition a living entity has towards the personality of Godhead is the deciding factor. Like Prabhupada would sometimes describe that it's very easy, that the standard for determining who is who is divine and who is demoniac, just simply one question: do they accept the personality of Godhead as their shelter? If the answer is no, demoniac, whatever flavor it is, however revered in this world, someone who has a big title or has a lot of knowledge or has a lot of money or can do lots of austerities or can do mystic feats, it's not divine. It's demoniac. Without shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, it's illusion. And this world is a place of illusion. It's filled with it. Different varieties. So taking assistance wherever we can in different ways for achieving the shelter at the Lord's lotus feet is what the Bhagavatam is advocating, and the mouthpiece this time is the demigods. They have a role to play in the creation, that's to maintain it, to manage it. Before they even have the capacity to do so, they're praying to the Lord for the capacity to do so. But the prelude to that praying is miseries of material existence will plague one unless one takes shelter of your lotus feet. We take shelter. Any discussion? Yes.
In the beginning of the class, you were mentioning about throwing off material miseries, not taking shelter as That's our identity. Yesterday also, answering to my question, you were mentioning about this differentiating, like, that's not me, and coming back to the real identity. Gone through situations where I'm ready to, like, I'm aware that that's not me, like, it's coming from somewhere else. But then I wonder, like, who am I? And, like, there's a lot of confusion, like, what who really I am, and who really, or what really my nature is, or what would I really do? So I feel, like, lost in that situation. Which identity to take shelter of?
What was the last part?
So I feel lost.
What was the last part?
Which identity do I take shelter of?
Identity. I'm not sure what you're asking. The identity is a tiny, insignificant servant of Krishna. So something other than that is not your identity, and you don't take shelter there. It's very similar to before one can fully become absorbed in anartha nivritti, one has to be absorbed in bhajana kriya, or the horse that pulls the cart is bhajana kriya, and the cart is anartha nivritti. So where a tangent should go is bhajana kriya, performing your devotional practices nicely. What will follow behind that is anartha nivritti will take place. So while you're paying attention to anartha nivritti, don't disconnect the horse. Keep paying attention to proper devotional practices that will give one the knowledge and detachment necessary. That's the verse. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha. Take shelter, in the language of this verse, take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And in that act of doing so, or by so doing, some empowerment comes. So that's where attention goes, to that identity, using the language you're using. I'm Krishna's servant. He's aspiring to realize that identity. While doing so, knowledge arises, detachment arises. So knowledge, what's what? And so, like, here's a weed, and here's a devotional creeper. So, now that I know I have knowledge, I can, on the strength of bhajana kriya, I can uproot this weed, and I can cultivate that creeper. I'm, you know, tending to my garden properly because of bhajana kriya, and, you know, it doesn't change. Supposing the garden is now completely clear of all weeds. Not like, okay, I don't need bhajana kriya anymore. It's, you know, that's the still the horse pulling the cart. And you can go further and say, before bhajana kriya there's sadhu sangha, before sadhu sangha there's shraddha. So faith is very important. Faith then further guided by the knowledge that arises from devotional service. There's the theory, and there's the application of the theory, and the realization that comes from the application of the theory, and there's strength that comes from that. So your question specifically was, what identity do I look to? The identity of this very tiny particle, spirit, soul, servant of Krishna. And the other things is, the other things are not who I am. They're designations at best, if not illusions. So with this designation, I serve in this way, I serve in that way, accept my role as a servant in this way, that way, inappropriately, as far as I can understand what my role is. But that's not my identity. Back to the core, what's my identity? That I take shelter, tiny fragmental part of Krishna meant for his eternal service. Each situation, life has its diversities. The joyful ones and the challenging ones alike.
I think the challenge of being faith is, I thought never like I had faith like in the process, but it's a challenge. So like when you say just take the strength from Vajnagriya.
Well, I went back also. Bhajana Kriya, why do we do, what's the foundation for the Bhajana Kriya? It's the valuable association with sadhus. Otherwise, what did we know about Bhajana Kriya? And, without some preliminary faith, who's going to take any association of sadhus? You know, life's a party, I'm having a good time. What are you trying? So, because there's some faith. So faith gets challenged, sure. But faith gets challenged can be a strengthening, not a debilitating experience. Faith is our natural condition. The nice example from Nectar Devotion is a child learning to walk. As the child is learning to walk, he gets challenged. But what does he do? Gets up and tries again. Gets up and tries again. On what basis? Because intrinsic is the walking capacity. So, intrinsic to the soul is the quality of faith, and the quality of faith is reposed according to the modes of nature. So we're going to have faith in something. We don't have faith in Krishna, but we have some preliminary faith that there is God, or there's something, I was mentioning this last night, there's something beyond all of this stuff that's just like happening all the time. The external show of the material energy. There's something beyond this. There's a reality. It's more meaningful and durable. I know it. It exists. I'm not exactly sure what it is. I know it exists. So it's some preliminary faith. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that advancement in devotional service is simply, or can be described simply in terms of growing of, or increasing of, or maturing of faith. So faith gets challenged. That's okay. That's life. Life is filled with challenges. And now, how do I address those challenges? Let me resource the fundamental thing that's is who I am. There's some faith. There's a natural position of our relationship with Krishna. It's there. And I may, depending, may not have such a crystal clear idea of Krishna. Although I have theoretical knowledge, I don't have that. It's not within my present experience. So, because it's not clear, therefore, your expression is, my faith gets challenged. But that's, in one sense, that's the price we have to pay for our foolishness. Or in the other sense, be patient, it will become clear. that you access whatever it is that's clear. And from that position, more things will become clear. It's just how devotional service unfolds. Don't try to run before you can walk. Don't imitate, but follow persons who you trust that they can walk and they can help guide me how to walk. So that bolsters courage and faith and take another step. But there's something that's not just another person who's outside you. There's something inside that's of an intrinsic value. Like the Chinese girl's question of you when you meet different people. There's a fundamental worth or value within each and every living being. And I'm not an exception. It's not like I'm something special. That there's some, that being Krishna is part and parcel. And then there's qualities of that part and parcel. And that's something wonderful. And so stay with that. However underdeveloped or not greatly developed, it's there. It's who I am. That's the access that you work from, or the identity that you access and from which you work. And then, you know, things out there may be like this or may be like that. It's, you know, it doesn't affect me. And my attention, I'm busy acting from the place of who I am, developing this platform of self-realization. And light dispels the darkness. Knowledge just dispels ignorance. The strength that comes from the soul dispels the binding influence of the conditioning forces of the material energy. It's all inversely proportionate. As you become Krishna conscious, the struggle is diminished. And that's the point that the demigods are praying. Those who do take shelter of your lotus feet, the miseries of material existence are completely gone. Like them, we also want to do that. So that's the identity that one takes. Oh, look at that misery, or look at the other misery. Look at this configuration of the material energy. Oh, look at that one. Oh, that one's really familiar. Look out. It's not our identity. We can recognize these forces are acting in the world. It's a cultivation. That's the language of nectar devotion. Devotional service is a type of or a sort of cultivation. When we visited Gita Nagari, we spent some time with Bhakti Patrick, because Bhakti Patrick is from the Chicago Temple, but he spent a month in Gita Nagari because he likes agriculture or horticulture or growing things. And he was describing, you know, they started the summer with organic gardening as kind of like a major centerpiece of the things that they wanted to do in Gitanagari for that summer. And it's difficult because, you know, how much weeding can you do until you get tired of weeding? It's like, you know, weeds abundant. And how I processed that was, and he said that Parijata did an, you know, enormous, fantastic job, but it's like there's so many other things that are required during farm life, and there's so many weeds. It's like a big program to keep the weeding going. So I was thinking, that's very familiar. I've heard that one since, you know, since I've been visiting Gitanagari. You know, they have these, it's winter time, and they make all these plans of what kind of gardening they're going to do, and, you know, springtime comes, and they're all excited, and they go out and plow, and they plant, and, but then, like, all this weeding. And I remember when Kali Lalita and Sanchisutta lived in Gitanagari for two summers, and she, you know, I remember seeing her out in the garden weeding and weeding and weeding and weeding, and it's just like got overwhelming. You know, they were that the amount of land they wanted to make into a garden was overambitious. It just was too much. So, you know, they need to make a smaller garden and do it right. You know, and they had to build a little greenhouse, like keep the, you know, so how many years does it take to make the seeds that are so deeply embedded in the soil gone because you just like attended to the weeding enough that, you know, it's weed seed free. It's just going to grow what you want it to grow. And there are other things that one can do, you know, to keep weeds down besides just pulling them out. But by doing that diligently over time, you can eventually get a nice spot for a garden. And the heart's like that too. Faith in the process is, you know, having knowledge and detachment. That comes from devotional service faithfully performed. Knowledge and detachment will follow, however long it takes, because there may be lots of weeds, or at least, you know, a certain variety that's really big and grows really fast. Just keeps coming. Monster weed. But continue to attend to the garden. That is, specifically the positive side is the cultivation of devotion to Krishna. And following behind that, the eradication of unwanted things. And that's my program, however long it takes. We want to be happy. We don't like to suffer. But, you know, it's the mode of passion is, I'm going to do it. I'm going to address my suffering. You know, forgetfulness of Krishna is at the essence of that. Doership. I want to be happy. That's from the soul. Misapplied is, I'm going to take care of these miseries. I don't like miseries. I get preoccupied with what they are and trying to deal with them, and in a doership mode, I you know, Whoops, I forgot Krishna again. The whole project is remember Krishna. But I got distracted by, I got ambushed by the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. Called material life. And spiritual life is no thank you. Mode of passion, have a seat. Mode of ignorance, you're behind him. They're not going to just sit down and be quiet. They're used to getting a lot of attention. So determination. Something else?
You related the terms, the Adi Buddha, Adi Deva, and Adi Atma to basically the effect, the cause, and the doer.
I directly took that from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's not like I did it. But go ahead.
So, is there any correlation that can be done with the corresponding creations?
Yeah. Okay. Cause, effect, and doer. Now that's not what's in the Sanskrit. It's karya, karana, and kartra. Mm-hmm. That's cause, effect, and doer. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has the sufferings that come from the cause. That's Adiatma, Adi Bhuta is the effect, and Adi Daiva, doer.
But the corresponding creation is like something originating from the mind and this body. And
yeah. Adiatmika Klesha, Adi Bhautika Klesha, Adi Daivaka Klesha. You don't have this world without a cause. It's the effect. So, the natural disturbances. Mm-hmm. And other living entities, or the mind, the body or the mind. And Adi-daiva, the other living entities, the demigods, the disturbance, the difficulties that come, the suffering that come from things that they have sanctioned. Yeah, there's a connection. Those same terms are in Bhagavad Gita. Adi-atma, Adi-daiva, Adi-vata. And not only in terms of kleshas. It's part of this terminology of what the material energy is made up of, or the subset finer analysis of what the material energy is. If you're interested in that, go to the Bhagavad Gita. And rather than have me walk you through it now, go into the Bhagavad Gita, look up those terms where they appear in Bhagavad Gita, look them up in the Bhagavatam and see where they appear in the Bhagavatam and see how they correlate. Here, at least this one, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has combined karya, karana, and kartra, cause, effect, and doer, adiatma, adibhauta, and adidaiva, as being like a one-to-one correlation, and suffering similarly. Anything else? Yeah.
I wanted to ask about when we say take shelter of lotus feet of Krishna, so that experience is beyond my life right now. So what are the things within my domain which I can hold on as lotus feet of Krishna?
What are the what you can hold on? What are the...
What are the things that I can hold on?
Things that you can hold on?
Or experience concerning.
What inspires you? I mean, one thing that comes, what inspires me, one of the things that inspires me is Srimad Bhagavatam. And the first two cantos are the lotus feet. So the messages of the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are the Lord's lotus feet in the literary form. So hear them, chant them, describe them, remember them, hear them again, you know, like, absorb yourself in the messages of the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's the Lord's lotus feet. That's, you know, a very simple and practical taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet like there they are. Canto 1, Canto 2. Or the deity form, the lotus feet of the deity form of the Lord is the lotus feet. And at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord there are innumerable loving devotees. So you can think of the disciplic succession as at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and take shelter of the disciplic succession or members of the disciplic succession. Or the spiritual master at the lotus feet of the Lord. Or the general affect, the feeling, the mood, is in humble service. Because when you're at the feet of the Supreme Lord, that's the mood. The message from the first two cantos is that message. That's the feeling or the mood that comes from the sound vibration contained within the first two cantos. Humble service. And then gradually that humble service mood can expand. And now how many times can one hear, remember and recite and describe and plunge into the first two cantos? The answer is there's no limit. And it's very satisfying. Very satisfying. Again and again. No limit. And becomes something that it's not out there anymore. It's something that's in here. And if, you know, when it's in here, it resonates with the quality of your chanting and the quality of your service and the quality of your worship and the quality of your life, because it's no longer out there, it's in here, taking shelter of lotus feet. At least that's what it means to me. Anything else? Yes.
So in her situation, for example, the question that she is being a mother, small child, hardly any time to finish rounds, no time to leave Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the focus that when the day is over, she doesn't feel the guilt that she didn't have time, for example, to...
We discussed this yesterday at breakfast time. You weren't here.
Okay. Because it's just curiosity. I'm far beyond that stage, but...
At least you don't have a small child. You're not a mother either.
But I believe that...
No, I understand your question.
Yeah.
I understand your question.
Because husbands usually, okay, I have to change my rounds. I have to go to work. And then...
Yeah, we went through all this. We went through this yesterday.
Yeah.
Not the same way that you're doing it.
Yeah. These are on the side, expected service from them.
I don't need to repeat what I said yesterday. What was it?
No, I'm just... That's okay. I don't need the answer because I myself had to adjust my tolerance toward, for example, toward my wife. Because I was, at some point, especially at the beginning, focusing so much on my
requirements,
improvement or requirements, that I totally neglected in a relationship, that I overlooked...
Anyway, that's not what's going on in this case. But... Part of when there are stages of life where there's like, one has to be very good at time management. You know, it's good to practice time management before the happens. But sometimes things have to be combined, like hearing and doing something at the same time. I mean, something that I learned as a brahmacharya, I wasn't a mother, but I learned to use time well because I had other services. I was like out on Harinam Sankirtan and distributing books for, you know, umpteen hours a day, like this person that was saying, you know, 15-hour day week. Work. How do you do that? You have to, you know, use your time carefully. And we didn't have iPods. I don't even know how to use an iPod. So I just, you know, had this little tape player, and I listened to so many Srila Prabhupada lectures, and so many. I listened to Chaitanya Charitamrita being narrated by Amala Bhakta 33 times. 33 times. Just by using time wisely. You know, while doing this, I'm listening. And it wasn't, you know, I would train myself to listen, not just like be absent while the sound was going, but listen. There are ways to do it if one has the determination to do so. Go back to the other side. Challenging, no question about it. But again, meeting challenges can be strengthening. Because when you're on the other side of that which is the challenge, now you have this shelter taking, and the challenge is gone. You know, the tendency then is, okay, relax. A little vacation. I worked hard. Don't do that. Continue to apply that principle in an ongoing cultivation, positive way. Okay, 10 to 9. Thank you very much. In the Prabhupada. Okay.